This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to the morning run on BFM 89.9, the business station. I'm Melissa Idris and with me, Ibrahim Sani, 6 o'clock, Monday the 21st of November. Hello, Ibrahim. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good.
Actually, despite dropping your laptop?
Yeah, I dropped my laptop.
A couple of seconds
so
earlier.
I'm rather rattled.
Right?
It's all right. I'm not, however.
Oh, dear. Yeah. I know the feeling. I dropped.
It's like a Monday curse, right? Monday morning curse.
No, at least did you have a good weekend then?
Yeah, absolutely. How about you? Did you have a good weekend?
I had one of those weird days where because of our weird body clock working in the mornings, right? Mm. I woke up at like 4 a.m. and couldn't go back to sleep. And then decided to be extra productive. So by 10 o'clock, I had done like an entire day's worth of chores.
Okay.
and then I realized this is terrible because I've just been working
like nonstop.
Nonstop and I'm exhausted. And then on Sunday I slept till noon, which was terrible. And then I thought, well, at least I had the best of both worlds.
What happened to the 7-hour thing, you know, where you're supposed to have uninterrupted sleep? God, I tell you.
I can't remember the last time we had uninterrupted sleep for 7 hours. Well, the challenges of adulthood, I guess. We'll stay with us all morning today because we're going to kick off your week with a great show on the morning run coming up this morning on the Breakfast Grill in a couple of hours. I will be speaking to Dr. Atiur Rahman, former governor of the Bangladesh Central Bank. Now, Ibrahim, do you remember that cyber heist case?
Earlier this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
right?
It happened in February, but it was only kind of reported and made known to the public in March. Now, it was more than $80 million that was stolen by hackers. So hackers had found a loophole in the SWIFT system. Now, it wasn't that the SWIFT system wasn't secure. It was just that it's an old system, and the hackers had monitored the Bangladesh Central Bank for many, many months and found a way to, I guess, fraud, to fake identities and transactions, multiple transactions, in fact. And it was months before anyone realized. And once they did realize that, it wasn't months that they didn't realize, it was months before they reported it.
Oh.
Now, because of that, the governor at that point in time had stepped down out of moral responsibility. Now, what I found interesting was Dr. Atiur Rahman, the former governor of the Bank of Bangladesh, mm-hmm. he was celebrated before this scandal. He was celebrated as someone who was a champion of the poor, he was really trying to make inclusive monetary policy, and he was lauded for it with multiple awards globally recognized. And I was just wondering, after all that had happened this year, did all his what happens to his legacy now, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
and
is it just gone, you know, gone to
this
waste?
This is something that is sad, in my opinion, because when you spend your entire career trying to build reputation and you are celebrated for it, one incident like this really takes it away.
Mm.
Having said that, this one incident was a big one incident, right? Because over $80 million were stolen. Just a quick question, Melissa. Mm. Did they ever retrieve back these money?
They got back a little bit, but the main part of it, most of it, is gone. So it was channeled to the casinos in the Philippines and multiple
right,
gateways.
Right. So they track just it. Whitewashed it.
Exactly.
So, where did this money
come from?
Yeah,
so
come from.
Essentially, the Bank of Bangladesh had savings at the U.S. Federal Reserve, the New York Federal Reserve,
okay,
to be precise.
Yeah.
And the hackers had pretended to be officials from the Bank of Bangladesh and requested transfers. Now, because they had monitored the way the central bank had done dealings and all that, they were able to very successfully lie to a lot of people, and the New York Fed didn't recognize that there was, in fact, fraud happening.
Mm.
Now, Dr. Atiur has said in subsequent interviews after the theft, after him stepping down, that he really didn't understand what was happening because it was a very tech. He said, look, I'm not a tech guy. I'm not technologically savvy. I had to have people explain it to me, and I didn't understand the consequence of what was happening. I thought we could get the money back. Mm. That's why I didn't make it known publicly.
Well, that's a very honest assessment.
Honest, but then, you know, they needed someone to take responsibility for it. I mean, 80 million from the coffers of the government has essentially disappeared.
Yeah.
Of course, someone had to take responsibility and he had to step down.
You know, in this day and age, right, it's not just to be the governor of a central bank, it's not enough for you to know monetary policy and a little bit of fiscal policy.
You have to
policy.
Know tech.
You have to know tech. Just last week, we carried this story that the Singapore Central Bank, MAS, is launching a cryptocurrency. Interbank transaction.
Right.
And over the weekend, I was reading several other central banks, including the Swedish Central Bank, is also thinking about the same thing, where interbank settlements are being done in a cryptocurrency format, or they're thinking about it at least. And, you know, for the past few weeks, at least on this station, we've been carrying the story of fintech, or you know, and the revolution that it carries from peer-to-peer to cryptocurrency to blockchain. And I guess it's undeniable that tech is going to come up and deal with this.
It's really, cybersecurity is something you need to look at in the financial sector.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what was really quite sad, I thought, Ibrahim, was the fact that he was only 4 months away from his actual retirement. So he was so close to retiring with honors.
Yeah.
And then this happened and he had to take
sounds very riveting. I can't wait for the breakfast
game. All right, 8 o'clock is when you can catch the interview with the man himself, former governor of Bangladesh's central bank, Dr. Atiur Rahman. After the grill, we have current affairs where we take a look at post-Bursae analysis with an academic, Dr. Koo Ying Hui. She's from the University of Malaya. She is with the Department of International and Strategic Studies there. Her focus, her research focuses on transnational activism, human rights, and the democratization in Southeast Asia. It's a quite interesting one, given everything that has happened over the weekend. I mean, what the latest now is that Maria Chin, the head of Bursae 2.0, has been detained under SOSMA for 28 days.
And, of course, SOSMA is a kind of detention without trial. And right now, the Securities Offences and Special Measures Act 2012 allows for the prosecutors to actually file for up to 28 days. And that is the maximum period allowed to be detained under SOSMA. And that's exactly what the prosecutors are after.
You know, Ibrahim, when SOSMA came into effect last year, I remember the concerns of civil society and activists thinking, well, what does this mean, right? And the former Attorney General at that point in time, it was Tan Sri Ganipatail. And I'm just going to quote him here. He said, SOSMA was introduced to deal with terrorism and other security offences. It was not intended to guillotine parliamentary democracy or suppress political freedom.
Absolutely.
And that was his promise. And look at what has happened now.
Yeah, and you know, remember that this act may carry the death penalty to the perpetrators. That's the maximum penalty allowed under this particular law. So, you know, can you imagine trying to arrange for a peaceful assembly and to be accorded the death penalty?
This is
the reality of things.
I was looking at the Bursae 2.0 Twitter feed this morning, and the top pinned tweet was that Maria Chin is currently being held in solitary confinement in a 15-by-8 cell with two light bulbs turned on 24 hours. There are no windows in this cell and there is no bed. And this is for like a 60-year-old woman, single mother?
Yeah, and I really don't know what's coming to this, because I just watched this particular show called Adam Knows Everything or something like that. It's on YouTube. It's basically going through the detention process of how solitary confinement is actually a form of torture.
Yes.
And under many international conventions, it has been outlawed. In the US, they introduced this back in the late 19th century. They even repealed it in the 50s, but they now have since brought it back in the 80s and 90s. And people are actually starting to lose their minds once they are placed in solitary confinement.
Yeah, you don't know, no sense of time, right? Because you don't know, is it day, is it night? Have
Absolutely.
I slept?
And the very nature of humans is that we're very social beings. If we do not communicate with others, we start communicating with ourselves, and you kind of lose sense of what's reality and what's not.
Mm, okay, well, that's something. I think there were a couple of candlelight vigils last night at the Jinjiang police station. We'll keep you abreast on the updates on this case throughout the day, if there are any. But very quickly, let me just finish telling you what's coming up on the rest of the show today. Every Monday, we have Pressing Matters at 9:30. That's the show where we go behind the headlines with members of the press. And today, Joyce Goh from The Edge will be on the show to discuss a couple of her stories in this week's issue, including a story that Media Prima is looking to sell its land to unlock some value, and that Ananda Krishnan stocks, two, in fact, in the AK stable, are now trading below IPO price. So
that's fantastic, because we've seen the news that Astro might be taken private.
Yeah,
by
we were just talking about that. But, you know, whether there's any truth to the rumor, well, let's take a look at the share price and see whether that's an inclination of where AK Ananda Krishnan could be planning for his stock. Okay, 11 minutes past 6 o'clock now. Let's take a look at what's coming in the next week. Ibrahim, what to watch out for in the coming days.
Yep.
This Thursday, we're going to have our BFM Network series. It's coming back. In fact, it's the last one of the year. And it's going to be a good one, because this year has been completely unpredictable when it comes to financial markets. You've got Brexit, Trump, not to mention Duterte, closer to our part
yes.
of the world. And the ringgit, have you seen what has happened?
No, I have not. What's happening with the ringgit?
Anyway, under such circumstances, it's only fair to ask what to invest in 2017. So we're going to be having essentially a chat over dinner with Kusu Chuang and Julian Ng. To find out what they think about next year's investment environment. Essentially, you know, you talk about Julian, he wants to replace the word trading with gambling. Whereas
yes.
Chuang, on the other hand, he believes, you know, if you read up enough, you equip yourself with information, you are able to pick the right stock. So two opposing views here about investment approaches. And I think it's quite interesting to see this discussion is one I would definitely want to listen
so
to.
So if you also want to be part of the discussion, there are simple steps to be part of the night. Number one, you can be part of the BFM community. Just go to bfm.my/community and register to be part of the community. Once you have registered there, then you can register and pay for the network series. You can go to bfm.my/network series and you can attend this particular BFM network event, which is this Thursday, 24th of November.
It's only for the first 80 people who sign up, because we want to keep it small and intimate. But come and hang out with us. It's going to be at the Next Academy at Glomac Nabansara from 6 to 9 p.m. this Thursday. Just do what Ibrahim said. Just be part of our community and register there. If you want to find out a little bit, we've done these series before, about two or three times this year now.
Yeah.
So if you want to find out a little bit more about what we do, what it's like, you can check out some of the videos, bfm.my/network1 or network 2 or network 3. You can see some of the photos and videos there. Okay, 6:40 now, Ibrahim. Thursday as well is still going to be Thanksgiving Day in the US. Now, I forgot about that. It's this week, isn't it?
It's this week. And the unofficial Christmas shopping is, you know, being kicked off. And this is the most important time for retailers. And we're going to be covering some of the stories about this crazy stuff that is happening right now in what is happening in the Christmas retailing business shortly after the 6:30 news. This includes fashion-branded bricks, as well as Apple selling books, like literally books, paper books.
Okay, all right. Well, let's find out more after this BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, the Beatles there, Don't Let Me Down. Hello and good morning. 6:21 right now, you're with Melissa and Ibrahim. We're taking a look at some of the news. Now, over the weekend, Ibrahim, I know you're a big fan of that hit Broadway musical Hamilton. You've listened to the soundtrack, and I know you've raved about that before. Well, there's some controversy with the Hamilton cast. Apparently, the Hamilton cast had some words for a member of the audience in one of the shows over the weekend. In fact, it was Vice President-elect Mike Pence who was attending the show. And after the show, the cast used the opportunity to make a statement. Here is the lead cast. I've got his name, but I'll find out for you.
Yeah.
And I encourage everybody to pull out your phones and tweet and post, because this message needs to be spread far and wide, okay? Vice President-elect Pence, we welcome you and we truly thank you for joining us here at Hamilton and American Musical. We really do. We, sir, we are the diverse America who are alarmed and anxious that your new administration will not protect us, our planet, our children, our parents, or defend us and uphold our inalienable rights, sir. But we truly hope that this show has inspired you to uphold our American values and to work on behalf of all of us.
Okay, so that was the actor who played Vice President Aaron Burr in the play Hamilton. His name is Brandon Victor Dixon, and he was making an impassioned plea to Vice President-elect Mike Pence. Now, I thought that was a really kind of a moving, kind of a plea. Just to sum up, he's saying that they're worried about how Donald Trump's administration will take the country forward, and he wants to remind the Donald Trump administration that please uphold the American values that are inclusive of everyone. However, Donald is not so happy, is he?
So the Donald is not so happy. He says that that's a shame that the vice president has been harassed, and the Hamilton cast was very rude, and he demands an apology from the Hamilton cast. So let's dial back, right? Let's dial back about this whole story.
Based on the clip you heard just now, did you think that was rude?
No, of course not.
It was quite polite.
By the way, they responded to that tweet. Victor Dixon said that, I'm sorry, sir, as in responding to Donald Trump, I'm sorry, sir, but having a conversation is not a harassment. And he commends Mike Pence for actually, because Mike Pence was actually leaving the theater.
This was at the curtain call.
Yeah,
yes.
And when that when the plea on asking Mike Pence to stay on, he actually did. And that's when this actor, Brandon Victor Dixon, actually said, or commended that Mike Pence actually stayed back.
Right.
But, let's dial back about this whole notion of why this is big and huge, right? Because Hamilton Musical, the full name of this particular play is called Hamilton Musical, The Story of an American Immigrant. And this is the very basic notion of the Hamilton Musical. It's a hit. They won 13 Tonys. They won a bunch of Grammys.
Apparently, it's really hard to get tickets to watch. It's like one of the toughest shows in the world to
absolutely
watch.
It's very, very, very hard for you to get the tickets. But of course, things have changed after the original cast left. This includes Lin-Manuel Miranda, the playwright of Hamilton. Anyway, so the cast of Hamilton is purposefully diverse. Mm-hmm. They chose an Asian lady to play the lead lady role. They chose an African-American lady to play the secondary role of the lead lady actor. Lin-Manuel Miranda himself is from Panama.
Latino.
Aaron Burr, the actor that plays the vice president that actually shot Hamilton, he's played by an African American. And even today, right, when Lin-Manuel Miranda has left, the person that took over his role is a HIV positive a homosexual. And that's the whole point of this play. It celebrates the diversity of America, the rich tapestry that the Americans have. And this story is also a New York story. And it's not just about the play being done in New York in Broadway. But Hamilton himself, moved from the Caribbeans to New York, and he made New York his adopted state.
Right.
And when he fought for the colonial, the Revolutionary War, he fought for the state of New York. And when they have achieved independence, he was a Secretary of State hailing from New York. This is all about the New York story. So Mike Pence, however, to contrast that, he has been making very interesting laws as the governor when he was the governor of, I'm not too sure which state he was from, but what that law allows was that establishments can discriminate against patrons who are homosexual. Mm. These are the laws that he passed, right?
Yeah.
So it really doesn't jive with the Hamilton story.
Yeah, I believe I read somewhere that his policies have been very strong against the LGBT community, Now, but for me, having heard what you said about Hamilton and a better understanding about why this was the perfect platform for it, I thought it was done, in theatre, right, at any point of time, I thought it was done quite respectfully, just at the curtain call, and it was a really kind of a measured way. There was booing in the audience, but it didn't come from the cast at all.
No.
But my concern was the reaction from Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the fact that he was so upset and he went on this, he started tweeting, there was three different tweets, and then he demanded an apology, apologize. I don't see that very becoming behavior of a president-elect. Can you imagine if the head of the country said, "How dare you apologize for talking bad about my friend or talking bad about me?"
Yeah, and
it's not very becoming behavior.
It's unbecoming of him as the president of the United States, or at least for now, president-elect. I'll quote the tweet by Donald Trump. He says that theaters are supposed to be a safe place, and it's supposed to be, people need to understand the sensibility within the theater. Of course, we can take this the funny way, right?
Because I think it's quite ironic what he just said.
Yeah, because, you know, if you remember, the 16th president was shot in a theater.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. A theater, okay, look, a vice president being booed in a theater is probably one of the best case scenarios for a president.
Yeah.
in American history.
Absolutely, absolutely. And our regular commentator, Liana, right, she actually responded to this tweet. She said that theater is where people express themselves, FFS. So I'm not too sure what that means, but
what does the FFS mean? Okay, never mind.
So anyway, so the theater is where people express themselves, and if you take the spirit about expressing themselves, okay, now I know what. It also means that you have to allow for a degree of a conversation to take place, right? And I think Hamilton was very, very brave in terms of doing this.
Yeah, I just worry that reaction from Donald Trump is something that we may be seeing going forward. Is this kind of a precursor or a sign of how he will deal with dissent, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even call this dissent. I just call this, a plea from the citizens that he will be governing.
Yeah,
right?
particularly when Hamilton is, emblematic of the different immigrant story, as well as different orientation, because that's part of the plea that they made to Vice President Mike Pence.
Okay, well, we're coming up to the 6:30 news bulletin, but after that, a single brick is now on sale on eBay at a price at $1,000. What makes it so special? We'll tell you after the news. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Move Over by Janis Joplin. Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Ibrahim Sani here with me. Thanks to Jeremy, who texted in to say that Mike Pence is the governor of Indiana. Thank you. The state escaped us for a second there, but thanks for pointing that out. And that was in reference to the story we were discussing earlier about the Hamilton cast, the Broadway play, making a plea to Mike Pence, who was in the audience over the weekend, and Donald Trump not being very happy about that, demanding an apology. Other news on our radar this morning include a red clay brick that's priced at more than $1,000 selling on eBay at the moment. It's sold by this skateboarding brand called Supreme, and when it was released, it was about $30 per brick, and because it was overwhelmingly sold out, Now, people on eBay are selling it for sky-high prices, and it touched $1,000 not too long ago.
Yeah, and you know, this story was alerted to me by my friend when we were having dinner last night, and I said, when he told me this story, I told him, how can this possibly be so? He said, go ahead, you know, go online, check it out. And it's true. You know, telegraph.co.uk, theguardian.com, all of them are talking about this particular red clay brick.
So it's just a brick with the logo of this brand. I've never heard of this brand, Supreme, but I take it must be quite big in the skateboarding world. In fact, this article cites that fashion gurus have been highly anticipating the release of this plain red brick for months now.
Yeah.
So it's just a brick with a brand.
It is a brick with a brand.
Worth $1,000.
Well, today it's worth $1,000. It was retailing at $30. So as you can
see,
but
even $30 for a brick.
Yeah, I mean this is the madness that is engulfing the retailing world. Melissa, we talked about this about 20-30 minutes ago. That Friday 25th of November is Black Friday, and the unofficial Christmas shopping season is going to be kicked off. Mm-hmm. And that's true because both in the UK as well as the US, this is the time when we will see some of the more important brands, consumerable brands, they will start introducing things that is not necessarily part of their normal lineup. And the reason for this to happen is because they want to create this affinity towards their own brand and try to extend the natural products and services of their brand by introducing something new.
And they just want to catch the Christmas shopping frenzy, right?
Yes, yes. And the latest example that we can actually cite is the story of Apple, the makers of computers. They now have introduced a new product called the Apple Book. And literally, it's a paper book. I just played a little short clip just down the studio. It talks about how this is being made out of gilded Egyptian cotton paper, mashed with
silver edges.
With silver edges.
To mimic the design of its product. So the book looks like an iPhone screen.
Yes. And the book is retailing.
You can hear the skepticism in my voice. It's a coffee table book.
It's a coffee table book that cost Melissa, by the way, $299, right? $299 for the bigger book, $199 for the smaller book.
So it's $300 for a book with pictures of Apple products in it.
Yes. Yes, Melissa. It's just bizarre, I tell you. And to make it even more bizarre, the first 7 pages or 8 pages of it is just plain white paper.
Okay. All right. So let's, to be fair to Apple, this is what they had to say. Now, they say that the price is high, but it's not unreasonable in the grand scheme of design books from architectural firms because Apple says there's a considerable amount of attention to detail with the book, such as how the pages go all the way up to the edge and the detail and the images and the quality of the cover and the paper. So essentially, what Apple is known for, which is its design, is reflected in this book. And therefore, you're paying for the design of not just the products and the picture and the images, but also the design of the book.
Yes. And you know, this is about the renaissance of Apple, basically, right? When Steve Jobs actually came back to Apple and he has partnered with Johnny Ive, there's a lot of stories that you can actually pick about the two good friends. Johnny Ive today is still with Apple. He is the vice president of design.
He's like Sir Johnny Ive.
Sir Johnny Ive, that's right. Yeah. And it talks about the story of the first Apple products that they worked together, which is the iMac with the CRT screens and so on, all the way until, you know, what we have today, the latest touch bar, MacBook. But, you know, you're right. To be fair, this is not the target segment that we're looking at, right?
So who would be the target segment for this book? Like, who would buy this book for $300?
They're called fanboys and fangirls. That is the target segment. And, you know, contrary to popular belief, there's a lot of Apple fanboys and fangirls out there.
I mean, I know of Apple fans of the product. Look, I use Apple products and I am quite happy with the ease of use with it. But I don't know that I would part with $300 to look at Apple products in a book. Besides, just another thing, how many of us sit around all day flipping through coffee table books?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, seriously, when was the last time you opened a coffee table book in your own house? Maybe in the doctor's office, but not in your own house.
Right? Yeah. So then this is the larger story of this is on the brand affinity and what does a brand mean to you, right?
Right.
And
I think with the red brick.
Yeah,
right?
With the red brick. And I think this is the larger discussion that everyone should be talking about.
Have we figured out what the red brick is for? So essentially, is it to build? Is it for construction? I mean, can you build a house with all the red bricks from Supreme?
Technically you can, because it is, after all, a brick. But Supreme Bricks, or Supreme Brick in this matter, is a singular thing, is for design purposes. And
so you put it on your desk?
Yes.
So Ibrahim will come and you'll come over to my desk and be like, wow, Melissa, you've really made it. You've got a Supreme brick on your desk,
right,
as a paperweight.
Clearly, you are a skateboarding enthusiast and you're very driven towards affinity towards a particular brand.
Do you have this, I mean, no shame, no judgment, but do you have an affinity to brands and labels?
I do. I mean, you know, So here comes the big confession, right? Because I am an Apple,
Enthusiast.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call myself an Apple fanboy. I do have an iPhone. I do use a Mac. But it doesn't mean that I'll buy a coffee table book for, you know, translated to ringgit, it's 1,200 to 1,600 ringgit for a book, right? and you know, we have this monthly, you know, spring cleaning in my house where we just, you know, clear things out of my house because
good.
The amount of trash that we accumulate in a month, right? And coffee table books do not serve as anything other than aesthetic purposes. They do not provide any new information. Like, for instance, this particular Apple book, which is, you know, aptly called Design by Apple in California.
Yeah, I think it's more of an accessory rather than a book for perusal, I guess.
And you know, instead of buying something like this, right, a brick or an Apple book, you know, with pictures of Apple products inside it, there are more, you know, constructive things that we can actually get. So the Straits Times, for instance, they just carried this story of self-driving mobility scooters. And, you know, this kind of, you know, product, for instance, it may bring more benefit to humankind,
right,
rather than a red brick.
I just wonder whether, you know, with Apple, I mean, this is a story not so much just of brands, but also of Apple, right? You talked about how Apple saw its heyday in innovation and design. You know, what we love about Apple is the simplicity of the design. But much like an artist who puts out its greatest hits collection, this feels very much like Apple's decline. Like, they've gotten to the point where they're now releasing coffee table book with all the pictures of their products.
So, you know, this topic has been discussed on Tech Talk, another show on BFM, where Frida Liu was having a chat with Matt Armitage. And he says that, you know, the moment, you know, a band starts releasing the greatest hits, it's basically the band, you know, cashing out and that's it.
I love that, Matt.
They're out.
Fantastic quote.
and this is it, right? I have a feeling that Apple is reaching towards the end of their zenith. Perhaps we need another, you know, renaissance, maybe 20,
just,
30 years on the road.
It feels so, I feel as a consumer and as an Apple user, I feel a bit used. I feel like they've certainly just released this just in time for the Christmas shopping season and they just want to get as much money from the users
as
possible. I'm a little disappointed, I have to say.
It is a huge disappointment, because to contrast this, right, Apple's number one, you know, arch nemesis, Microsoft, when Apple introduced that touch bar on their MacBook, right, Microsoft released something very interesting, a product that we have never seen coming out of Microsoft. It's called the Microsoft Studio. And, you know, you have this little knob that you put on the screen and you can just do wonders with it. It looks fantastic. A lot of these websites, the tech websites, are giving fantastic reviews about this product. And this couldn't have come at a better time for consumers because of the Christmas period. And the response from Apple is that, you know, we're just adding a touch bar, an OLED touch bar on the keyboard space.
Where's the innovation? Right?
Where's the innovation?
All right. Well, I guess we'll be seeing more and more products like this ahead of Black Friday this weekend, and also, again, the kickoff to the Christmas shopping season in the US. Okay, 10 minutes to news. That's coming up at the top of the hour. But to take you there, we've got Travis with Sing, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.